Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
To you that who you were, who you became, and the mystery of your fate changed the life of a girl who wouldn't even know your name 800 years after you vanished. But that's what happened. Well, it's sort of like you theremin me. Completely changed me, my whole life.
And I can never really tell you how much you mean to me, but I honor you. Wherever you are. And I hope that this message finds you well. Thank you for sharing your life with this universe. Thank you for creating an amazing son, for loving him into being his best self. Everyone should have a dad like you. If you ever want to talk, I'm here, Benjamin.
Hello, and welcome to, you got it, the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hello? Are you out there? Are you listening?
There were a lot of, like,
gobbles and gooble goobs.
There were a lot of those record drop noises in this episode, which was the,
actual record drops.
Oh, man. It was, what was that? Was that last week where it had that schwinga schwing schwing?
Oh, yes. It was the previous episode. Vox in Excelso had a little bit, during the debate performance.
There were a lot of those.
1980s urban rap music.
It's urban.
Like the Sugar Hill Gang.
But there were several of those.
Digital Underground.
There were several of those, I felt, similar kind of like
I don't
scratches.
Go nowhere without my gym hat.
Needle drop thing.
In this episode, in the Sam episode?
Yeah, there were. They weren't as obvious. They were not nearly as obvious as... But if you listen closely, there were a little bits here and there.
So you're just...
But the problem is, the thing is there was so much frenetic shit going on in this episode that it was kind of in... It could get lost in the noise.
So is what you're suggesting, because I was kind of waiting for you to play one of those, but it sounds like you did not clip those because they're encased in too much other...
Yeah, there's too much other...
Cacophony?
Yeah.
The cacophony of this episode?
Cacophony.
All right. We need to discuss... I felt that deep inside me. What the fuck is that? Why is that doing that to me?
I don't know.
Is it because we're wearing headphones? I don't remember that happening when I watched it on the TV with my really good sound system.
I don't know.
By the way, new listeners, the gag is that I've got a good sound system and Dan's got a giant TV. Wouldn't it be great if we teamed up and put those two things together?
Well, I have actually a pretty good sound system, too.
You got a pretty good sound system. You got a sound bar. You got a good sound
I don't,
bar.
I don't have a sound bar.
He's got a good, like, he's got,
are you
like
fucking
a,
kidding me? I no, have a, I have like a,
he's got like a little subwoofer.
I've got like a receiver, a full like okay, receiver right. With like
I'm just teasing you.
A setup and everything.
Dan's got a good setup.
I got a setup.
Yeah. You do have a good setup.
I don't want to tell you what setup, because I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but
it's
a pretty good
we
setup.
Don't want to needlessly endorse brands.
Yeah. And I have a subwoofer.
Okay. I don't know why that sound affects me.
It's a ported subwoofer, not sealed. Some people like
ported?
Sealed. Some people like sealed subwoofers, but often people like sealed better for music. People like ported ones for movies mm-hmm. and TV. Although some people prefer sealed for all like it's really a preference thing.
Sure.
But generally speaking, people tend to go mm-hmm. Ported for movies and TV, sealed for music. The ported, you have a ported one yeah. where it has the hole on yeah. it.
Now, question for you, Dan.
Yeah.
Given that you are an aficionado. And, and don't worry, audience, we will get back to the proper discussion in a second. But you are an you are an aficionado of both movies and music. Mm-hmm. So you've chosen to go lean towards the movie side of things when it comes to your subwoofer? Or is that just sort of incidental to what...
I mean, movies... Actually, it's hard to say nowadays because the TVs have often pretty good sounds on them now. I mean, I like me a good series. Like, I'm pretty obsessed with the Fallout series. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'm sad that I watched it all, and I'm almost considering watching it front to back. What I did is I watched each episode of the second season, and then when the last episode came out, I started from the first episode of the first season and rewatched all, and then watched the last one, and now I'm sad and I'm thinking about maybe watching it all again. I don't know, I just like living...
I did that with The Expanse.
I just like living in that world, you know? It's like something about it, and I'm sad that I can't live in that world right now.
And specifically the sound aspect, obviously, it's worthwhile to have that good sound.
And you
quality.
Say I have a giant TV. Honestly, I think my TV is maybe 3 inches... bigger in size, 2 or 3 inches bigger than your upstairs TV.
Yeah, it's giant.
It's barely bigger. Yeah, it's essentially the same size.
It's gargantuan. Mine's giant, yours is gargantuan. How about that?
I guess if there's a line between giant and gargantuan, yours is on the very top end of giant and mine is on the lowest end of gargantuan to be a difference of about 2 inches.
I'll accept that. Categories are tricky, as we know.
Thank you.
All right. We haven't mentioned...
Organics are chaotic.
Indeed we are, Sam. Indeed we are.
Yeah.
We this week happens to be Dan and me. I'm Patrick.
I'm Dan. Radio.
Jesse unfortunately couldn't attend tonight, but we, Dan and I, are going to be discussing...
We're going to be disgusting.
No.
We're going to...
Well... Possibly.
We're going to be really, really disgusting.
We will be discussing series Acclamation Mill.
It's time to figure out what happened to Benjamin Sisko.
I love it. With a ding,
ding.
I love Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned many times that Deep Space Nine remains my favorite of the Star Trek series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, everyone's got their favorites, and we have all sorts of reasons what might feed into that or otherwise.
I can't prove it, but I know it's true.
So
Jake sounded really chilled out this episode, by the way.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, like... I don't know. I get the impression that for some people this was a divisive episode. I don't like the term divisive because it wasn't. I think... Almost,
yeah, but in a cool way, right?
Almost universally, I think this episode was really loved and appreciated by people. Some people either didn't like it or took issue with some parts of it, and we will, of course... discuss that over the course of...
I hope so.
Oh, they did it. Wait, they did it here.
Oh, there you go.
A little bit. Not quite the same, but wait.
I hope so.
It's not quite the same, but there were more.
That was almost like a robot rat sound.
Robot rat sound.
Yeah, robot.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. It's true.
Right.
So we will be discussing this very interesting episode. I will say right at the top, I really dug the episode. I enjoyed it. I'm on the side of really appreciating just about everything they did with this episode, including some of the fun flourishes in the directing style that they did, especially at the beginning, but throughout the course of the episode.
Everything is written out on our pad, so it shouldn't be hard.
But I really enjoyed this episode as well. I was like a little bit nervous at first because the opening was just so jarring. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's happening? And I liked it, but I liked that it stopped after the opening. Now, granted, the rest of the episode, it was still kind of high energy. There was this whole weird time situation going on with her. Like at the beginning, she was standing still.
Due to the photonic nature of her existence.
Well, but it was confusing because at the beginning, she was standing still, right? And everything around her is moving like fast, which would imply that she's thinking really fast, what that would imply is that she is moving really slowly at the beginning. If she's moving normal speed and everyone's fast, what that would imply is that time passes by more quickly for her, which would make sense because I guess it's kind of like a year is actually a few minutes or something like that, or a few hours. I don't know. But there was another.
I'm with Janeway. I have my temporal mechanics. This is a variation. It's not time travel, but it's that kind of like how do different beings perceive time is fascinating, but also difficult to think.
Yeah, about. It was confusing because and then one part, like she zapped back from talking to the makers, and it showed that countdown to how much time she had left, and it showed however many seconds were left. It was 604,800 seconds, and the seconds were like flying by like milliseconds, but the activity around her didn't speed up, so it didn't match. You see what I'm saying? So if the seconds are going down like milliseconds, shouldn't everything around her be going fast too? But it wasn't. Everything was going normal speed, but the seconds, so it's like it didn't even match correctly, right? Like she was going normal speed, everyone was going normal speed, but for some reason time was going down all quickly. So like temporal mechanics must not just be like backwards and weird. It just doesn't line up with anything that makes any sense.
It's nonlinear, which harkens back to the prophets of the wormhole. The wormhole prophets.
The wormhole prophets.
I don't know. I'm talking like this all of a sudden.
Yeah, for sure.
Go back to the emissary. It's not nonlinear. they were all about being nonlinear, and Ben Sisko had to teach him a thing or two about linear humanity and all that other jazz.
Your pa is strong.
When he told her pa was strong, like, does that officially mean that pa just kind of measures the amount of, like, energy something has? Is that what pa is? It's like you're detecting how much energy, like, emits from them. Because if she has strong pa and she's just, like, a photonic, that's got to be saying, that must be saying something. Do you think the writers were trying to say anything like that? Or do you think they were just kind of, or was he just small talking? Or do you think the writers didn't really think about it too hard?
Okay, right. Like, so when it comes to pajamas,
I respect that you tried.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm right there with you, Jaden, because I respect Bajorans and I respect their philosophical frameworks and beliefs and all that other stuff. I always took the pa business to be less a real thing.
Yeah,
more,
well, right.
More like when you shake someone's hand, you're like, hey, how you doing? How you sound? He's been like a great guy. Or, you know, firm handshake or whatever. Maybe they're reading something. I don't know. Interpret it how you will. I think in the
a fine answer.
I think in this case, and in the stuff you were talking about earlier with the time stuff, for me, I didn't think as deeply as you.
It was really confusing.
I just enjoyed the visual representation telling the story of her different ways of perceiving the world, her confusion. You know, it was really a good way to orient us to her perspective, which I thought was fun.
And in and I enjoyed the opening, but like I said, I was concerned it was going to be like that the whole episode. And in retrospect, I think that was perfect to just have the opening like that, while still maintaining high energy throughout the rest. They did the thing at the title card again. Whereas last week they had the Klingon in the title card, this time they had her crayon things. I want to mention something about, because I noticed it again this week, and I have a sound clip to sort of, I don't know if it does a proper job really representing what I'm trying to say, but
I
feel like...
Is this a Dan can't stand?
No, not at all.
Is this a Dan sometimes notices?
Yeah, this is a Dan sometimes notices.
Okay, good. This is a new segment. it's not going to be every week. It's going to be sometimes.
Dan sometimes notices... and he happened to notice last week and again this week that they put a lot of ADR on Jaden's voice. Speaking of Jaden, like last week, especially when he was there were a couple scenes last week where it seemed strong. This part, I'm hoping this translates. It might not, but this is
a recording from last week.
This is a recording from this week.
Okay, from this week's episode from series Acclamation Mill.
And it sounded like it was ADR, like a lot of, it was a continuous shot of his face. Mm-hmm. So they weren't switching camera angles or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just one shot of him talking. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like they just clipped things together here.
No, it's horrendous. I respect that you tried.
Like the part when he says, I respect that you tried.
No, it's horrendous. I respect that you tried.
I could be wrong, but it kind of sounds like it was clipped together.
It could be. They're definitely.
But you can definitely tell that there are.
Is that vibe?
His lips don't quite match up with his what he's saying as much as everybody else.
Although that being said, I have noticed, I think other people have noticed, if scuttlebutt on the internet is anything to go by, that there's a lot of ADR in this series.
Yeah, and but I feel like to him, I agree with you, it's more noticeable, I could be imagining it, but maybe it's because his voice is so different from everyone else's, I'm putting something where it isn't, but to me it seems like his doesn't quite match
I think
much.
It's more noticeable. One reason it may be is another thing that we didn't discuss last week, was that he tends to, Jaden talks with a relatively slow and deliberate cadence, but when he gets passionate, last week in particular, especially in the debate, he starts talking faster and faster and faster. And I was thinking that maybe that slower speech that is his normal speech is a little harder to match up or easier for us to catch up, especially with the way they audio encode things these days, because they do definitely encode things a little differently than back in the day where lots of people complain about this, where they feel they can't understand the sounds well, because they're encoding it for like 5.1 surround sound, and I don't think they do a good job of mixing it down to stereo and other formats so that the voices get muddled.
There was one part last week too where he was voiceovering while they were looking at like the Nomad Planet or whatever, and it almost sounded like his raspiness was entirely gone as well. And there was a certain part, so yeah, his voice kind of changes around. But anyway, we're not talking about
that's a last Dan week. Sometimes notices.
So, and I noticed it last week, and I noticed it again this week.
Now,
Dan sometimes notices.
Now that you've reminded me,
right?
You've reminded me. I want to check with you, Dan.
Yes.
I want to check with you. Do we have any of the old Dan standards this week?
You are not going to solve this mystery with facts alone.
That's a beat, almost. That's not even a beat, that's a melody.
You are not going to solve this mystery with facts alone.
It's a couple extra beats. Do we have any, what do you call them?
Duty or no duties, or
there was
or
one
various lists and whatnots, poops and poop-em-ups? What?
Poop-em-ups. Yeah, there's one poop-em-up. There's one poop-em-up. There's one thing I discovered after the fact that could be mixed into a beat. It would be like this.
Good thing I'm hilarious.
I possess a biting wit.
Good thing I'm hilarious.
I possess a biting wit.
Good thing I'm hilarious.
I possess a biting wit.
Yeah.
So that could work into a good beat.
Now.
They're talking about the same thing. It's clever, right? No, I should have said, it's clever. No, I didn't say that though. It would have been funnier if I had said that first, but I didn't say it. So instead I corrected myself and said the thing I wanted to say, and it's not as funny.
We haven't even mentioned the B-plot.
There was a defined B-plot that was totally separate. And I think we can each agree this
Super
week
agree.
Without much fighting.
When I was
pretty amped up last week, though.
When I was posting last week's episode, I realized, I was like, it's oddly appropriate that we were very combative during the debate-focused episode.
Pretty wild stuff.
Yeah,
right?
No, good B-plot. But yeah, lists, duties or no duties, game 'em ups, poodles mixed with other breeds of dogs for some reason.
Well, I mean, I have just like a small list. It's not even, I don't know, it's more of a discussion. There was a few things that I just don't remember about, like the things they were saying about Sisko from the Deep Space Nine.
Oh, okay.
There's a list of things I don't remember.
Things you don't remember. It's like, you know where my keys are?
Yeah. No.
I can buy my spare keys.
And then I had an audio list of just all the different references to Sam.
Okay. All the different references to Sam. Well, we'll definitely get to those lists. No duties or no duties.
There's one duty or no duty.
One duty. One duty
you
or
called
no
them poop 'em ups is what you called them.
And of course, we will in the third break reveal last week's Where the Hell Did I Hear That Before and play this week's new Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before.
All right.
That's right. Exactly. So that'll be something to do in the third break. Maybe we'll do some of Dan's audio fun 'em ups or whatever that was in the second break. And
here's to working together to build a bright future.
And we can now get back to talking about Sam, series acclamation mill.
Yes.
Now, we mentioned earlier, I think maybe in when we were discussing Kids These Days and Beta Test, that the character of Sam is one of those ones that if it's not performed and written properly,
right,
it could easily become an aggravating character.
Right, yeah.
And that thus far, that has not only has that not been the case, the character's been kind of interesting, but until this episode, we didn't know much about Sam, right? We just know little bits and pieces here and there. And so in addition to all the Deep Space Nine stuff, which of course is really cool, that's the nice part, especially for longtime fans. But the purpose of the Deep Space Nine stuff is to give us an opportunity, give us a mechanism to learn more about Sam and how she perceives herself and her role in Starfleet and all that, Starfleet Academy, I should say. I think that's really cool. I was excited for this episode. I was a little nervous, like you were saying, Dan. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it worked out very well.
Yeah, you think that was like actually her dancing, it looked like.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Carice Brooks is doing a fantastic job inhabiting this character and making her playful and inquisitive. Without, again, I mean, I guess it's subjective to one degree or another, but without kind of falling into that more aggravating side. Like, think about Data, right? And I know that, like, Star Trek has this character slot.
The amazingest.
There's the character slot. Spock was one, which was, again, the sort of outsider wrestling with some sort of identity thing. Data served that purpose. The Doctor. Sam really definitely is a version of that, that we're seeing a different version of that. It's neat that they're doing that, but it's also, it's different enough. It's not like Data, but Data had a little bit of that early on stuff too, where it was like, he could have been annoying. Mm-hmm. In fact, he did annoy some people. He annoyed Riker, a couple people doing various.
Oh, things. I thought you meant annoy the audience.
Not the audience. I mean, I'm saying they didn't annoy the audience.
Right. So
they can annoy people in the show.
Yeah, so I was wondering at the beginning, like, I was wondering if all of that was true to what was actually happening, or if any of that was happening in her mind. Because at first, when when everyone is high fiving her and like everyone's like, "Hey, Sam, yo, Sam," it's like for a minute, for a second, I thought it was going to be showing everyone being like, "Hey, Sam, yeah, yeah," and then it would actually like cut to the reality where everyone's actually really weirded out. By
her. And it was going to be a depressing episode. Yeah, right. Can't fit in.
Yeah, because that's kind of how it was sort of like leading with that, not with the main characters, but there were some other characters.
Sure.
So it wouldn't make sense that the main characters would have been fake saying hi to her. But then there was also, I figured like, nah, this is, that's, it seems like that would, you know, follow. It's just, they were being really enthusiastic. But then there was the scene where Darum was like eating that banana food, and Keonians are allergic to something about potassium rots in their stomach right away.
There was some fun technobabble.
And then she was like, oh, and they vomit glitter. Yes. And I was like, was that just made up? That sounds made up.
I believe that Darum vomits glitter.
You think that, in story, Darum actually vomits glitter? That doesn't make any sense.
Why not?
Why?
You talked about how pretty he was when he was in fish form last week.
So that makes sense. What do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying he's like a fish. He's a fish monster creature. Maybe they.
But why glitter?
Because it's why not glitter? Why can't they digest food into some scaly business?
Because
it's like fishy scaly business.
It just because glitter when she said glitter, I was thinking like literal glitter that you get.
They show him vomiting and it's like a hilarious floating glitter.
Like little pieces of shiny paper that you cut up and throw everywhere. Sure. Why would some random species happen to vomit the same thing we throw at parties?
Because the universe is a glorious and wondrous place.
No. Okay, there's a difference between having special abilities as an alien to like withstand certain pressures and that kind of magic. Yeah. But then there's also just like, oh, well, this person, you know, can like, you blow into their nose and their butt plays a kazoo, you know, it's like, or it's like you stretch their leg and it's like a trombone slide, you know?
Or remember that planet where like Kirk and Spock went and then there was like these, Puritan guys and then the Kirk and Spock had to break Satan out of jail.
Okay.
And then Kirk did magic against the Puritans.
I would buy that even more than just randomly having someone glitter. It's like the thing we throw at parties is the shit that this species from far away happens to throw up. Now, are you saying that it's the same material, or are you saying it's fish scales that happens to look like glitter?
I'm saying two things.
It just seems kind of absurd to me.
Here's how I took that. And what I enjoyed about that was that they were playing with the form, and I enjoy when Star Trek plays with the form. Strange New Worlds has done it a lot recently, but it goes all the way back in time. They've done it from time to time. So they're playing with how they're presenting the information. It's artistic in the sense that they're conveying to us information that it does not have to be 100% realistic, but it quickly gets the message to us. Like her, that scene you were talking about with her getting all those high fives and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that was cool.
I love that because it's very swiftly conveys to us a lot of information about how things are going for her and how she is feeling accepted.
Yeah, sorry. I don't have a problem with that. I understand.
I'm just saying, like the glitter thing to me, I took that as, yes, there's a version of that, but we are seeing kind of a subjective / artistic, not necessarily even a Sam's impersonation, but the flavor of her interpretation of the events that she's seeing.
But that's the whole original point I was making is like what we're seeing out of her eyes is not the literal reality in the show's reality, I should say.
Okay, but here's the thing.
So I'm saying it's being filtered through her eye, through her lens.
But
that's what I was originally saying.
But this is what the nuance here for me is that she stated outright they vomit glitter, and so what I am prepared, Dan, look at me. What I am prepared to concede.
I do not answer to you.
I am prepared to concede that perhaps both things can be true to a degree in that they quote unquote vomit glitter, as in when Darum vomits, it's not chunky sloppy stuff and it is sort of glittery type stuff. I also will concede though, but perhaps it is not so colorfully and comically vividly glittery as we were presented during this initial thing. But that you may call it. You might, when he starts puking up, it's not going to be like splat splat blah blah. Oh my gosh! And then like in Goonies, when Chunk does the fake vomit, and then everyone starts vomiting for real, and then he starts vomiting for real. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think it's that going to.
I get it.
Like he's an alien and he pukes weird. Like I'm totally cool with him puking something weird that could be called glitter in terms of just reaching for something to categorize the strange alien vomit.
You don't do well with ambiguity, do you?
I also thought it was funny that he was, because we all know the person who will eat the thing that they're not supposed to eat, even though they know they're going to throw up.
I believe that what you just said is essentially my original point.
Then we're in agreement.
Because I was saying, like, sure, I would believe that something he vomits is colorful and weird. Mm-hmm. But like, as it appeared on the screen to look literally like glitter that you throw at parties, I was thinking that is focused through her lens. Much like I was thinking at first, all the high fives and all the craziness was a little bit focused through her own interpretation of events, which, while not a lie, were maybe like, like, you know,
it's
like
her truth.
It was through her prism of what she sees.
She didn't get 10 high fives all at once, but the feeling is conveyed by that. That's what you're saying.
Right. And so that's kind of what I was getting from the opening, is that a lot of this stuff was like, you know, like through her eyes, you know, basically. And it wasn't the exact way that most people might agree on a reality. In fact, her reality is vastly different in a lot of ways than I think a lot of other people's realities. I mean, the fact that she can have like a full conversation with these light strings in less than a second and then zip back, you know.
Well, that's part of the fun of learning about.
That's part of the fun of being photonic, is you can do shit at speed of light.
Well, yeah. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, very good chance you're a Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. One reason you may be a Star Trek fan, I think a commonality among certainly a large proportion of Star Trek fans is, or at least one aspect of enjoyment that we get is in Star Trek and other sci-fi speculative fiction, is the ability to create characters like this where it's like, yeah, they're not real, but let's play around with what does it mean? What would it mean to be like this person? And I like that even though she's a quote unquote hologram and she's doesn't want to be called that, obviously.
Holograms?
We have...
No, she doesn't want to be called a... Oh, yeah, hologram. Yeah, that is what she...
Exactly.
Right.
She wants to be a... They photonic. Refer to themselves as photonic, right? So they're differentiating her from the Doctor, from Moriarty, from other popular holograms or digital simulacrums or android people like Data and Who's He What's It's and Captain Picard's and Admiral Picard's and all that business. So that's what's fun about it, is that we're given a new little playground with this cool new character. Mm-hmm. And this is the first of hopefully not the last episode that really gives an opportunity for us to learn about her and to shine, which was cool.
Well, originally it sounded like your argument was that it was literally glitter she was vomiting, and that you changed your argument a little bit.
I don't know. But we'll leave it to the audience to consider, and they'll let us know whether I did that or not.
Great.
Which
good.
You're just a good arguer, Dan.
Oh.
Maybe you've convinced me of your cause, or maybe we just meandered around so much filling content, time content.
People believe all these things are true.
And I forgot what the fuck I believed.
I made you forget what you believe.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to take a break. So let's take a break. We'll take a break. And when we get back, we will continue our conversation about this episode, series acclamation, Mill, and Dan's gonna do some audio stuff of some sort.
It's not very. I mean, it's just the only reason I brought it up as a list is because last time I played a series of sounds, you were like, "That's a list," and so I announced it simply because so you wouldn't do that this time.
It's so brilliant what you do, and you always downplay it. I just imagine, like, I'm like interviewing you for your job, and I'm like, well, tell me something. What's bad about you? He's like, I suck. I'm miserable.
Well, I mean, all it is just a. It's just me. I just collected. All I did was collect all the different ways that her name was said in the episode.
And natural talent.
And it's just like it's nothing clever about it. It's just
but nobody else did it.
It's just a one. It's just like, here are all the things that
nobody else does it. It means it's clever.
Mm.
In my book.
Did you now?
All right, we'll be right back.
Pause, please.
And we're back.
Greetings, visitor.
Oh. Hi.
Oh. Hi.
At one point, they showed Darum's, like a text card with Darum's, a bunch of Darum information, Darum Raimi information. Do you remember that part? There was like a card that appeared on the screen. It was easy to miss because it was only up there for a few seconds.
What was the context? Why were they showing information?
Because she was talking about some stuff and like she was talking about like...
Was it like his record or something? Or was it her file on him?
I think it was like right around when he was eating the banana food and she was talking about how Kyone, like she was talking about like... Kyonians are like allergic to this thing or whatever, and for whatever reason a graphic appeared on the screen which was like Darum's like information that she pulled up.
That's one of those, again, you were referring to the sort of the frenetic stuff, and now that I think about it, I'm guessing that's her own representation of the information she's been collecting about him, I guess.
So
is that how we interpret it, or is it like a file she was looking at?
I don't even know, but like I used AI to figure out what it said. I took a screenshot of it and then like ran it through a thing.
Okay.
And so he's ranked cadet. His major is science. He's 17 years old. He was born on Stardate 851095.82. His education is a Kyonian Royal High. Or I don't know if it's Kyonian. She says Kyonian, but anyway.
She mispronounces various things like Kitomer.
Yeah.
She said Kitomer.
Right. Graduation date 868490.0. Species Kyonian. His bio is a promising student and high achiever, boasting exceptional marks in both academics and extracurriculars. Notable academic achievements include excellent scores in curriculum, including mathematics, biology, and physics. There was no, unless the AI missed it, there was no Oxford comma after biology. Interesting. Oh, I'll have to check to see if the AI
maybe
just
he's a
it.
Cambridge boy.
Raimi also excels in extracurriculars, particularly in leadership positions. These include captain of the Kyonian All-Planet Under 18 Calica team, premier team Kyonian Parisi Squares.
Okay, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's the dangerous one, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, Riker got mad at the kid for playing Parisi
Squares. He's like, oh, and then was it Troy who was like, you played Parisi Squares?
And he's like, that's not the same thing that I played. Blah, blah, blah. My dad was a bad dad from Alaska.
Bad dad from Alaska.
One of them bad dads from Alaska. There's plenty of
husband, father, Starfleet officer.
And recipient of the Kyonian Good Citizen Medal in recognition of his community outreach and volunteer service hours. Raimi also carries glowing recommendations from his experiences, many of whom are revered teachers and high-ranking, this was covered by by a hand, on Kyonia. Raimi is a self-proclaimed optimist and expounds his covered by a hand. There was a part of it, like, it was like some hand was holding it, but it wasn't like a real... I don't know. I have to rewatch that scene.
Was there anything talking about him being the captain of the ski team?
And then it says, and loyalty to his family, his homeworld, Kyonia, and Starfleet, and then it ends. But yeah, that was basically all we saw. I don't know. I didn't see anything about the ski team.
Didn't see him, because he's presumably got to be the captain of the ski team. Because he's got the vibes of the captain of the ski team.
But
who's the son of the local mine owner. Everyone in town, their jobs rely on him, but the mine owner's a bad guy.
I would very much like to find out.
Maybe in season two, they'll delve into that.
Maybe. I don't know. That was some real yodeling.
That was some real yodeling for real.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get too much further, we did receive a voicemail from Tarek, from our very old friend.
All right.
Tarek. And he's not aged. He's in approximately the same age as both Dan and I. Because he is a contemporary of ours. We went to school.
I don't get it.
With Tarek. Oh, you get it, Dan.
I don't get it.
We always love to hear from Tarek. So take it away.
Hey, guys, it's Tarek. Just wanted to chime in on the wonderful, wonderful Sam episode that we got from Starfleet Academy. I've been looking forward to this ever since I saw the first previews of it, the hints of it. And I kind of hoped something like this would happen when I saw that Tawny Newsom had joined the writing staff for Starfleet Academy. I know that she has a great love of DS9, as we see in this episode. Mm-hmm. The surprise appearances in it, the reveal of the character she plays, mm-hmm. everything amazing. I know you'll do this at the beginning, so I don't want to spoil anything for anyone else. But I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I do. It was fucking awesome. I love this show so much. It's probably the second best first season behind Lower Decks, but ahead of Strange New Worlds, I think, of the recent ones. I can't wait to see more and hear you guys' reaction to it. As usual, keep up the good work. You guys are awesome. Even you, Dan, if you're a million times wrong most of the time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Agamus!
Tarek, of course, is teasing Dan.
Yeah.
Dan is frequently correct.
Ah. Even though I'm frequently also incorrect.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I'm sure like during those arguments last week, everyone was like, Dan's so stupid. He's arguing so vehemently for something he's so stupid about. Now, I'm not admitting I'm wrong. I'm just saying that everyone else probably thought I was wrong. But just because everyone thinks I'm wrong doesn't mean I'm wrong.
I like watching you kind of work through these scenarios in real time.
Like, you can think that everyone thinks you're wrong, but still think you're right, right? Is that an admission of wrongness?
Not at all, Dan. Not at all. You may do whatever it is you'd like to do. It's part of the freedom of the podcast format.
Okay. Let's do it.
Say whatever shit you want to say is great.
I was saying off air that when off internet
pre-recorded.
Not
for public consumption.
When Tarek on the Blueski entered said that he was going to leave an expletive laden voicemail.
Yes.
I assumed he meant that he hated the episode. I was like, "Uh-oh." But I'm no, it's the other kind of expletive laden.
Well, no.
But it's always great to hear from Tarek. So.
Absolutely. And Tarek, I agree with you, and I agree with you about the season thus far. Of course, you know, we'll see. There's a few episodes left, but the short 10 episode seasons obviously doesn't give us as much to go on as old style, you know, gold silver era, whatever you want to call it, Star Trek's. However, I would agree that they've really like been firing on all cylinders.
So when he said it was behind Lower Decks for first season, but ahead of Starfleet, Strange New Worlds.
Yes,
for first season?
That was his ranking. Yeah. My ranking would probably be similar. I know that everyone else's mileage will vary. A lot of people, I think, thought that Lower Decks took a little while to get fully on board with it. For me, I liked it from the beginning, but I also agree that the first couple episodes, they were kind of finding their way a little bit and then, you know, settled into it. Similar to this season, right? The tone of the beginning of Kids These Days was understandable in retrospect in terms of setting up everything, but it was also very different from the rest of the show, which has been a great combination of humor and adventure and pathos and teen angst, which gives us the opportunity to take some things seriously that we might not otherwise, but that's fun. It's fun to explore some of those ideas.
And it really hits on those messages of hope in Star Trek because they're rebuilding. And even, I think it was even in the first or second episode, they were basically saying like, we didn't have time to learn about diplomacy and basically we didn't have time to learn about inclusion and things like that because we were just trying to live.
Yes.
So it was all defense, which is like not a happy place to be. And now they're just reaching the point where they can start to truly rebuild in a way that looks towards, you know, connection rather than protection, you know.
Absolutely. It's all about working together, solving problems, and they're demonstrating that in each of these episodes in different ways, right? Teamwork, work, individual growth, interpreting cultures appropriately to better communicate with people, and all of that together, all that's good, old-fashioned, awesome Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, teamwork makes the dream work.
Well stated. You know, speaking Genesis of, Lithe.
Lithe. You love that name. You love to think it's silly.
It's very on the nose.
Real quick, I want to mention, we haven't heard from freaking Frasier for a while.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Frasier, you out there? We haven't heard from you in a while.
Hey, buddy. Where you gone, pal?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
And also new.
You're Dax.
Right in. Send us voicemails. Tell us hi. We like communicating with people and interacting with people. It's fun. Okay.
Sam's whole mission is she has to like
we get some more details here.
It's fucked up because her whole job is to succeed perfectly at this job that nobody's ever tried before. Yeah. It was
but be advised. If you fail in your mission to understand organics, you will be of no use to us. Mm-hmm. You will return to Kask, and all contact with organics will cease.
Which
forever.
Forever. Forever.
I hope Dan gets that. Yes. Okay. First of all, that voice, I think, not the one you played, but the Kask voice, to me, it like, sounded like they were doing a little Doctor Who-y type stuff.
The Maker's voice. Yeah, I think IMDb called them the Makers.
Something like that. Yeah. And I'm not...
they were just a string of lights.
I'm not like a Doctor Who person, but I do respect it. Just never been able to quite... Drink down that drink. But,
drink down that hot tea, that Calrec tea.
But I also do respect that they're making some Red Dwarf references, they're making some Doctor Who references. Some of them are direct, like in Strange New Worlds, they had an actual TARDIS, but that voice of that guy talking to me, it evoked Doctor Who or other British sci-fi where it's like, I am sci-fi man, I'm talking like this, and telling you what to do in weird absolutes.
It's cold outside, there's no type of atmosphere, I'm alone. More or less, let me fly far away from here. Fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. I like to lie shipwreck and comatose, drinking fresh mango juice. Goldfish O's nipping at my toes. Fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. Fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. Do 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 do.
Sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
Yes, yeah, right. That was the theme song to Red Dwarf,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, I recall. but good to point that out to other people, just for the people who aren't familiar with Red Dwarf, so they don't think that you've gone completely insane.
The problem is I was singing too much in my throat. I need to be singing from my diaphragm. Fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. I like to lie shipwreck and shit. I need some vocal teachings.
Well, you need to do some warm-ups. We didn't do any warm-ups.
Yeah. My brother Rob could teach me, give me some pointers.
Absolutely he could.
Yeah. Haven't heard from him in a while either.
Oh, well.
I've talked to him.
Are we still alive?
I've talked to him personally. But
oh, you mean podcast style.
Yeah, podcast style. In this world, the separate dimension.
The podcasting dimension. Yeah. Okay, so what's fun about the... fun, maybe not the right word. Sam is a photonic. She is getting this aggressive message from her quote-unquote makers, which I guess are the analog to her parents / leaders of her world, whatever you want to call them. It's as ridiculous as it is that to say this because she's a photonic and they're photonics that live in some sort of crazy digital world.
It's a photonic world.
It's still very relatable. It's the classic, you are representing us and don't fuck it up or we'll fuck you up kind of thing. This is a...
Cute!
And it's an age-old story. And so, again, they've done a really great job of taking this very alien concept and making it, putting them in a relatable position, which is they're trying to figure out themselves and navigate this new world they find themselves in, and they're dealing with this pressure from home, which is not helping. So they come up with this particular solution, which is they want to get into this class. That's the MacGuffin of this episode, is that her makers have told her there's this specific class she has to take because they think it would be useful.
Yeah, and I had that wrong, because at first I thought that it was her idea to take the class because she thought that would help her mission. But then later on it was saying that they wanted her to take the class. But I don't remember them telling her to take that class. I thought it was her decision.
I think it was in the beginning. I could have this wrong, but I seem to recall they were like, this course will help you. We want you to take this course. And she was like, but it's halfway through the semester. Yeah. I can't, like, just, and they were like, we don't care. It was that, again, yeah, making a demand that they don't understand the context that, right, that Sam is working under. And they're just telling her to do things that don't even make any sense, but she's going to do her best to try to do it.
By the end of the episode, like, there was this big threat of, like, taking her and sending her back home. And like, to, like, live, you know, yeah, by herself
forever.
But, like, in the end, she was just like, fuck you guys. Yeah. And like, and they didn't take her home. Like, so
good lesson.
So I guess that they were all full of hot air. They couldn't, I mean, they could zap her back if they wanted.
They're just like digital monsters. Who knows?
But I guess she didn't, there was no threat, because she could just said, fuck you the whole time.
My understanding, and I agree, it's a little bit confusing because we're thinking of it in terms of aliens and robots and monsters and computers.
aliens, robots, monsters, and computers. That pretty much covers it.
Isn't that Netflix cartoon show? Mm. But again, I took it as if we look at it as the analogy of the student that's being sent to an exchange student being sent to some school in an ambassadorial role. Of course, mm-hmm, here she takes on the quote unquote emissary role, representing a culture, a people, et cetera.
And she was all like, I'm an emissary just like you. And she is an emissary, yeah, but like he was on a bigger scale, I would say. Anyways, sure, that's a sure, side, that sure, was a side quest, but yeah, I mean, she was
probably unnecessary to kind of dig in that her problems are a little smaller scale.
I mean, I know it's not cool to like rate somebody's trauma or rate their importance, but she's not exactly
the three trauma units.
She's not exactly an emissary like Sisko. No,
but she was. She's self-identified.
I mean, I know I admit that what I'm saying may be construed as kind of rude. But,
no, because watching this whole episode, I was thinking, I get what they're doing. Ambassador probably is a more apt term, yeah, than emissary.
I mean, I'm okay
with it. But emissary works too.
But I mean, I'm okay with it because she is Sam and she's like, yeah, you know,
but again,
plucky.
Because the context was of a person being sent off, that's why, in my view, it didn't bother me for her to have the agency, the choice, to just simply decline. Because I think the idea was, of course you're going to listen to us. We're your parents. You have to do what we say. But then the lesson in if it was a human scenario, the lesson at the end would be, the kid would be like, I don't have to listen to you, parents, because I'm an independent person. And the parents would be like, that's cool. Okay.
That's cool. Okay.
All right.
That's cool.
Staying safe.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, on something sort of related to that, I was going to say, they had some questions that they wanted to answer, mm-hmm, in relation to what they wanted to know about organics. They listed six of them. Mm-hmm. What is food? And
this is a list. This is not a Dan list.
This is an on-screen list.
An on-screen list of questions.
Yeah, that they didn't state verbally, uh-huh, auditorially, but they showed on the screen with a little, right, in the form of popping bubbles.
Okay. I remember the questions. I don't remember reading them all.
There was, what is food? What is Starfleet? What is love?
What is Starfleet? Isn't that an episode of Strange New Worlds that I hate?
Oh, I don't know.
That's an episode of Strange New Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
That's a documentary.
That's
a
documentary. Yeah, right. Right.
That really rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't like that. All right. What is Starfleet?
Yeah, you did really hate that.
What is food? What is love? Was that one of them?
Yeah.
And then you're going to play the song? Are you looking for the song?
I didn't even think of that until
So what are you looking for? You're like, your fingers are scurrying about. Like,
because I thought
like
of that.
Clever little mice scurrying about your sound effects device.
Well, there. It's because I thought of it as I was saying.
What did you think?
I was.
Oh, you thought about something, but you haven't revealed what it is yet.
What is
No, that's
love.
Not it. No, I was thinking.
Did she say what is love there?
That's what this sound effect. What I was saying, like, you were saying I was going to play the sound effect of what is love,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Hadaway What is Love music.
Yeah.
You played a sound clip from TOS.
Is love?
Was that a robot lady saying what is love?
Okay.
And the one you just played, right? Was that Roger Corby saying what is love? Who said
that? Oh, my
God. No, you're confusing me. What's going on?
What is love?
Yeah. Was that the, which one? Was that the speedy girl? Which one is that? Why am I not remembering these things?
What is love?
This is marked, "What is love? Baby, don't hurt me." Yeah. And but that's what it's marked as, but okay. That's not at all what it is.
No, you just, this is the problem where sometimes you make a funny file name and it bites you in the ass every now and then.
Yeah. You know, anyways, I thought of playing the "What is love" song sound as I was reading this. And the problem is now I can't find it.
Okay.
Because I didn't look at... Oh, wait.
That is a problem.
Oh, wait. Let me go over this list again, actually. Patrick,
okay,
there's
you
this...
You go over the list.
Let me go over this list.
All right. Okay. For the audience at home, Dan got a particular sparkle in his eye all of a sudden, which means he's figured something out, and he's super delighted by it. So I'm excited now. All right. Let's continue.
So the list was, what is food? What is Starfleet? Mm-hmm. What is love?
What is love?
No, no, no. All right. Okay. Nice. Okay. What?
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me.
It's like a true beginning.
Yeah.
Don't hurt me no more.
Okay. That was a long way to get to something with minimal payoff.
You know what it was? It was a long way to Tipperary.
To Tipperary?
Yeah. It's a long way to Tipperary. You don't know that song?
It's a
long way. You don't know? It's a long way to Tipperary?
It's a long way to get to the rotisserie chicken with French fries.
Indeed. Okay.
The number four was, what is sleep?
Okay.
What are dreams?
All right. And what are dreams made of?
And
which is a line both from Shakespeare and the title
of the Robin Williams,
a very depressing Robin Williams movie that the previews pretended like it wasn't depressing, but
it was
a depressing movie.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters actually. Why do you get hungry? Okay, so
that's related to what is food.
And so what I felt was,
what does it feel like to poop?
What I felt was interesting with this whole conversation with the makers. One of the questions is, what is love? Well, she kind of discovered, without mentioning it, they didn't focus on this at all, but she discovered what love was when they threatened to send her home, because she was like talking about her response was basically like that they were going to take her away from her friends. She's like, you're going to send me home, then I can't be around my friends. I mean, that's a form of love. Like, she was upset because she was going to be taken away from her friends. Yeah. And this whole time they've been asking these questions of like, what does it mean to be organic? What is love? That's an organic thing to do. But she obviously already felt love, and she didn't even realize it. And they didn't like point that out. They didn't point that out in the episode. I don't even know if they intended for that connection to be there.
I think
not.
They did. I didn't think about it, but I think it's a very good observation, because clearly she's getting back to what you were saying earlier about the show being about rebuilding families, rebuilding the Federation. That's part and parcel. But what's happened here is that she's built a community for herself in the short time.
And they didn't explore that explicitly, like the fact that it's like they're trying to figure out what love is. Right there, they could have been like, oh, well, this is love. Yeah. But I don't know. There was another time at the end when she starts crying about being an emissary while she's talking to Jake. Mm-hmm. At the end, she starts crying a little bit. She has some photonic tears.
I noticed, was interesting, because she doesn't have, we haven't been presented with her having any particular constraints about emotion or anything like that. It looks like we've seen her have her feelings hurt.
She
cries here. She's been happy.
I mean, if you have emotions, one can probably assume you know what love is.
I can't prove it, but I know it's true.
Maybe, but isn't that something difficult for like all kids? Isn't that something that humans learn over time? Because you get confused.
Yeah,
there's hormones, and then there's love.
Yeah,
and
but
then
she
there's a little of both.
But she doesn't have hormones.
But she's got dials.
She was.
She's got little dials that.
Although when
sexy old Caleb can go and wheel around in her dials.
This is incredibly sexy.
When he said that, she was all blushing. She was all like,
I thought the same thing before he even said it. I was like, yeah, this guy. Kind of,
so he thought her digital interface was sexy.
Yeah, I can buy that.
And he gave her that. That's when he gave her the yodeling music.
It made me think about how
I don't understand how he gave her yodeling music.
So kids, back in the old days, when you wanted to learn how to program, one of the first things you did, you got yourself a BASIC. BASIC, and after a certain point,
great.
I think it was like DOS 5 or something like that. QBASIC.
Did you know?
QBASIC was pretty great. And one of the first programs they would give you built in with it was Snake.
What?
Now, some of you might think a Snake is as a Nokia thing. No. The Snake was a QBASIC thing to begin with. It came on Nokia later. But the Snake, and there's a reason I'm bringing this up. It's relevant, Dan. I fear that you think it may not be relevant. The reason is relevant.
I have my questions.
When you load up Snake and Cubase and you can run it, you can start fiddling with it and you can learn about learn about programming. One of the things you learn about programming is you got some of these variables, some of these constants. You can change the numbers and it changes like the length of the snake.
Yep, sure.
Or it changes the color of the snake.
The amazingest.
Or maybe the size of the arena the snake is moving around in.
That's my favorite.
And that's what this made me think of when he was fiddling around with her internal dials. He was fiddling around with her variables a little bit.
He was fiddling with her variables.
Fiddling around with her variables, you know, put the 0 to the 12, you know?
That seemed wrong. You do the
same thing when you're running a BBS and you got playing Trade Wars or Legend of the Red Dragon. You go into the DAT file and you fiddle around with the numbers a little bit, you know?
For some, it's a necessity.
See, Dan knows what he knows what I'm talking about. He's just refusing to give me the satisfaction.
No, I know.
He'll give it to me later.
I get it.
He'll say, like, after the podcast is over, he'll say, like, you know, I didn't do it on the podcast for comedy reasons, but, you know. Yeah, you may, yeah. You.
Look, I don't know if I can do whatever this is.
No!
All right, we'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah, we're coming up on a break soon. So we did want to get through some of this other stuff with Sam. You know, the arc is pretty straightforward, right? Like it's not anything groundbreaking, but it is really nicely presented. And especially this concept of her needing to take this class that's all about like understanding, similar to what Picard, remember, you know, Picard tells Data, like, you can do everything right and still lose, right? This is not the same.
It's a no-win scenario.
There's the no-win scenario, like the bombity-ba, you know. The
bombity-ba.
Yeah, the jibbly-jabbly.
Stop being a one-fast bird, boy.
Kobayashi Maru. But this class that she wants to take with Isla Dax, as it turns out, played by
Isla Dax,
played brilliantly by Tawny Newsome, who, by the way, if you notice, when she's introduced, she's got her hands behind her back. She stands like Jadzia Dax, like, yeah, because it was a common thing for Dax to always have the hands behind her back, both Ezri and
I want to say I actually missed the reveal as it was happening, because like when she pulled her hair back, the markings were slightly half off screen, and then when she walked by the screen, it didn't look too focused, so like I didn't, and I'm not saying
super obvious.
It wasn't super obvious to me. Now, I'm not saying that they did anything wrong. I could have just missed it based upon my own like lack of ability, but like for me it wasn't super obvious. I didn't get that she was Dax at first, even when she pulled her hair back and walked by, because I didn't clearly see it, because like I said it was like half off screen, and then when she was moving it was like kind of blurry, so it was hard for me to see that.
You need to get a bigger TV.
Yeah, maybe.
She's got a worm in her belly.
But then when I saw it a second time, I was like, oh, okay. So I think it should have been more centered instead of like half off screen when she revealed it.
But this class that Isla Dax teaches is in part about
your Dax
understanding, or at least that's what we get through the episode, is it's about understanding that there's not always a specific or correct answer to things, right? Mm-hmm. Or that it's all about, I forget what the name of it was, but it was like learning to live with uncertainty or something like that, which is an important thing for people to learn to deal with. And in the case of this episode, clearly the photonics are presented as being very binary, obnoxiously so, aggressively so. So it's important for Sam to learn this lesson. It's probably one of the most important things that she can bring back to her people is this kind of, there's not necessarily a specific answer to some of the questions like you cited earlier that they want to answer.
It wasn't called Learning to Live with Uncertainty. What was the class called?
I can't quite recall.
Well, we have to find out.
All right. Well, how about this? We got to take a break. So
confronting the unexplainable.
Confronting the unexplainable.
Confronting the unexplainable.
I showed a picture of the time stone.
Mm-hmm. Time stone.
And the other thing.
The times. Yeah.
The guardian of time.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as the time stone.
The time stone.
One thing I did not expect was this episode, from where it started, to lead into a Cisco episode. Because I didn't look at any previews for it ahead of time.
I was very good about listening to people's admonitions. I think that's me. Against being spoiled by it. So I watched it as early as I could. I got up early and watched it. I had some feeling, again, just as Tarek had mentioned in his voicemail, that Tawny Newsom's participation in the writer's room, which I think they've got a great writer's room. And I know it's not just Tawny Newsom. She's getting a lot of attention, but clearly she's had an impact on the humor and I'm sure other aspects as well. But this episode, I encourage people, if you haven't already, read interviews with her. She did a bunch of interviews, podcasts, articles, all sorts of great stuff talking about all the stuff that went on behind the scenes to make this episode happen. Getting the buy-in of Avery Brooks through Sirach Lofton, getting Sirach Lofton to come on board, which turns out he and Tawny Newsom are good friends and have been friends for a long time. So that's part of why that relationship existed. So go check all that out, because it's really, really cool.
It sounded like whether or not this was going to work was
unpredictable.
Forever. Well, I kind of forced that in there.
We don't want this. We don't want this segment of the podcast to go on forever. So we will be right back.
So this is still happening.
And we're back.
Hi. Welcome. Are you of Bajor?
I am of Bajor.
Here's some Sam names. You want to hear some Sam names?
I do want to hear some Sam names. Is Sam Neill among them?
No. Aww. This is just different ways they say Sam in this episode.
I'm Sam.
Sam and Hammer.
Sabra.
Samarine.
Samburger.
Queen Sam Samalina of Samonita.
Ceres Acclamation Mill. Ceres Acclamation Mill.
Hi, this is Sam!
What was that last one?
Hi, this is Sam!
Where's that from? That's very familiar.
It's from the Sean Penn movie, I Am Sam.
Oh my God, I thought that might be it was. That's referenced in that movie, right? Tropic Thunder?
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Jaden!
Jaden!
Is that the Rakashino?
I like that.
Is that the Rakashino?
Is that the Rakashino? So Sam was referenced, the nicknames given to Sam... We hear Samurai, is that one of them? Did I hear that correctly?
Samurai.
And what was Samalama Ding Dong?
Samarooney.
Samarooney?
Yeah.
Samarooney, okay, I dig that. What's the next one?
Samburger.
Samburger is great.
And then...
I mean, it's obvious, but it's great.
Salmon Hammer.
Salmon Hammer.
Is it Salmon Hammer or Salmon Hammer?
Samenhammer.
Is that confirmed with the closed captioning?
It's confirmed with whatever transcript I read online. And I think it's closed captioning as well.
Have you discovered yet a regular site that you dig? Or do you not want to announce which site you use for the...
For the newer shows, I they don't have them on Chakotea, so I have to use this.
Generally, just again for the audience, Dan usually uses, or all of us actually use Chakotea.net for, they have Enterprise in before, right?
Yeah.
So they have the full scripts from Enterprise back through TOS. Yeah. It's a great resource. It's like GeoCity style, very old school. But for newer ones, we've got to use other resources.
This newer one, I use this one. It's just a transcript. It's called foreverdreaming.org. It's full of ads, so like it's obnoxiously so if you have an ad blocker, like I don't know, I don't want to tell people to use an ad blocker and take away someone's revenue, but this shit is overwhelming with
we
ads.
Can also go the other way, and if folks have any recommendations for us for a reliable source for Star Trek episode scripts for the new series from Discovery onward, we would very much appreciate that information.
There's another one called TV Show Transcripts, which is basically just another transcript like Forever Dreaming, but like that one blocks so many IPs for some reason. Like it won't accept,
really?
It won't accept my Fios IP. It doesn't accept
your Verizon Fios, and you're not, is that without a VPN?
Because that's with, no, it's with without a VPN. It won't. It blocks like a whole slew of IPs for some reason.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know. The gun went off. I don't know why.
You shot Marvin in the face. It's been a little while since we had a Pulp Fiction reference.
It is. The doctor is a bad mentor.
No. They're setting something up.
They're definitely setting something up, because it started with the first episode when they were referring to Captain Gwyndola, and he had like that. He got all shitty.
He seems to. He's a do as I say, not as I do person, in the sense that like he seems to not handle loss well. The whole like living a long time, the whole Highlander thing where. He's had to watch his friends die. I think that's going to be presumably what they're going for.
Well, but also like, okay, well, first of all, by side quest, he has that slow aging program to make like people organics feel more comfortable. Yes. But I mean, like, slow aging over the course of 1,000 years.
Yeah, of course it doesn't make any
sense. It doesn't make any difference when you live 100 years. It's still going to weird you out.
It's ludicrous. It's one of the many ludicrous things we accept in Star Trek. Yeah. And if anybody complains about it, go back to the cage.
Yeah.
Go back to where man has gone before.
But, I mean, you compare the Doctor's mentorship here with Sam versus Allura Thok with Jaden.
Or the Doctor with Seven, by the way. I know there was a little romance there, too, but the Doctor... was also one of Seven's mentors.
I don't remember. Was he a good mentor to her?
He was better.
Well, so what I'm saying though is in this series, close together, Allura Thok with Jaden was like that was great mentorship. Mm-hmm. His was super shitty, and I know they're building up for something, obviously, but it's like she was giving all this great advice and stuff like that, and he was just like sort of being like, "I'm disappointed with you," and she's like, "Well, how do you get over loss? You just move on.
You just move on.
It's not a big deal. What the fuck's wrong with you?" And it's just like.
She's only been alive, what, 4 months or something?
Yeah, right.
And he's been alive, 900 years.
So there's something about Captain Gwyndola that I think I have not watched, so I need to watch Prodigy. I think it's with Prodigy.
It's Prodigy, I think that triggered it. There's been a few moments, and it is interesting because this show is attracting, if you go by comments online, this show is actually attracting... a new audience. Lots of people who never watched Star Trek before have said they're checking out this show. So in that sense, the show is doing exactly what it set out to do, which was
open
Star Trek up to a potential, a wider, different audience. Not wider, maybe, but a different audience.
Everybody wins.
And those folks won't have the background that you and I and many of the people in our audience have to know that the Doctor, when we see the Doctor respond to Sam that way, we're weirded out because it's a little bit out of character for him. Because normally he's all about helping. And the Doctor's character, part of what makes it fun is that, he's a doctor. He wants to heal, but he expands that to beyond just medical stuff. He wants to be a helpful, integrated part of his community. He wants to have friends, and he has an ego.
Right.
So it is unusual for him to be so dismissive of Sam, and seemingly, especially in the context of giving advice on being a photonic. And I'm really interested to see where they go with this. I'm guessing we'll learn more before the end of the season. I don't think this is something they're going to draw out too much longer. And I am also guessing it either has to do with, as we mentioned, either his perhaps not yet having learned how to deal with the fact that he lives so long and has to watch his friends die, or maybe it's something a little more broad than that in terms of just his perspective on the world and his place in the world. So there's hints of that. We'll see where it ends up going.
Only love can interpret these words as they were meant to be interpreted.
Sam,
great to hear.
Sam
Brooks again.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, real quick, you know that clip, it's not from Deep Space Nine, and it's not a new recording made by Avery Brooks, but rather he gifted them that line off of a recording he made in 2007. He did a spoken word album, and so that he thought that was appropriate.
I wonder if they tried to get him and like they couldn't or something.
My understanding from listening to the interviews with Tawny Newsome and others was that they played it very lightly. They wanted to get his approval. I think they didn't bother trying to get him. Maybe they did, but I think the idea was let Sirach Lofton kind of work through him. They wanted him to read the script, which he did. He called the set and talked to Carice Brooks and Tawny Newsome and Sirach Lofton on the set. He gave his blessing to use this audio clip from his spoken word album. I think they got more than they initially expected that they would get from him because he's been retired from acting for 20 years.
Oh, okay.
And so, it was not expected to be in the cards. I think people were actually quite surprised that they got as much out of them as they did.
He chose and was chosen all at once.
And I think it's, I don't know if you noticed this because I didn't notice this the first time watching it. I had to have it pointed out online and then you can notice this. You see Sisko in the clouds in the very last shot. Oh,
I didn't notice that.
When they're looking out over, you know, from the atrium, they're looking out over the San Francisco Bay, and there's some clouds up there. It's very subtle, but it's very clear that Captain Sisko's face is sort of formed in the clouds. Mm. And I thought that was a really... It was a nice touch, but it was also a good resolution to what I think is one of the biggest problems some people have with this episode, which was that Avery Brooks was not happy with the end of Deep Space Nine being Sisko leaving his family, essentially, to go live in the celestial temple with with the old prophets. And so he made sure they added a line where he's talking to Jake at one point, you know, sort of space prophet talking, and says, I'll be back. I don't know if it'll be yesterday or tomorrow, but I will see you again. And so some people didn't like that this episode suggests that Sisko never came back. I didn't interpret it that way. I interpreted all the stuff that Jake was saying was ambiguous, but I think you got the impression that Jake was like, no, I got to feel touched by my father again. And then by having Sisko in the sky, I think that really was like, nah, that dude's still out and about. And in the meantime, Caleb and them, they can have their little fun debating. You know, Caleb's all like, he's dead. He went in the fire caves, or, you know, all that stuff. The episode left everything ambiguous, which was the message of the class that Sam was taking, right? Like the whole, how do you confront the unknown and the unknowable? So that's, like, we as the audience are going along with her. And so I think that's probably if I had to guess, maybe Avery Brooks appreciated that about the way the script was structured.
That's intense cool.
It was intense and cool. And Sirach Lofton is awesome.
Yeah. It's funny that, she was trying to solve the mystery for, that is presented in a class called Confronting the Unexplained. And she's like, if you answer that, you can teach the class, because the class is basically over.
And before I forget, because I'm old and I'm going to forget, and I think it is probably one of the most important things we have to mention during this entire discussion, and my notes are a shambles this week. It was great to see Sirach Lofton back as Jake.
Yeah, it was.
It was even greater.
He seemed really mature.
It was even greater that he was wearing, like, you know, like Jake style, awesome, crazy Jake clothes. Yeah. I've always been a fan of Jake's fashion. I know some people think it's ridiculous and crazy. Mm-hmm. If I had the balls to do it, I would dress like fucking Jake Sisko with those crazy 90s, like, like patterns like you'd see on the Arsenio Hall show or something. Like,
is that the Ractagino?
Ractagino, extra sweet. Macabre bread, no crust.
No crust.
Chief O'Brien. I was jumping back. You were talking about how the doctor, and then I'm going to jump forward again here. But you
do have to do where the hell have I heard that before?
Yeah, you were saying.
But I want to hear your jump backs and your jump forwards.
So you're talking about the doctor
crisscross.
The doctor has ego, and he does. But at one point in the episode, they say, she says, Sam says, a little background. Organics created my species a long time ago, but only saw us as servants. Not good. Yeah. After they left, my makers became sentient. So I'm kind of interested to know when they left, because apparently it was before the doctor was around.
We don't have any details.
Or maybe they were just an independently separate group of... Because the doctor refers to himself as a hologram, and she's like, we prefer photonics, which is interesting that he's referring to himself. So it almost feels like they were made independent of each other
somehow.
Which
would make sense. I mean, and again, another thing they're doing, which the 32nd century setting helps this, but also I think it's just a conscious effort to kind of go back a little bit to definitely TOS, a little bit TNG vibe of, just invent some new aliens, right? Yeah. Kyonians, new aliens. Genesis Lithe, I think she might be part human, but she's also part new alien, right? It's not...
Genesis!
They're not limiting us to only the Cardassians and the Klingons.
He's
the Frangians,
a Kyonian.
We still get to play around with those. That's awesome. But now there's some, like, new alien shit, and the photonics, some new alien shit.
On jump forward back, we're on the subject of Sisko.
Jump forward back to what we were
to the future. Sisko, there was that short list I had of, like, things I just don't really remember from DS9. One of them, they said that Sisko was created by the prophets.
Yes.
Is that a fact? That his mother was both human and prophet. And even Jake says that without the prophets, his dad doesn't exist, and neither does Jake. Yes. That was like actually 3 points in one. Mm-hmm. But basically, I don't remember the part where it was actually confirmed that he was created by Prophet. It's been so long since I've seen it I forgot.
That's all seventh season stuff where Sisko learns that.
I mean, I remember the ending. I just don't remember that it was confirmed 100%.
Yeah. Although, again, part of the brilliance of Deep Space Nine was they played around in ambiguities, right?
Right. Like, that's what I felt. I felt there was still some ambiguity.
Wormhole creatures aliens or are they gods?
Right.
Like the Bajorans. That was a major theme of the show, and that was continued in this episode.
Right.
But it was fairly explicit in the show that the wormhole aliens or prophets, whatever you want to call them, created in some fashion, in some slightly biblical fashion, Sarah, I believe was her name, which was Sisko's mother. Sisko Senior made a baby with her and then she disappeared.
I mean, I remember that whole crazy wormhole scene at the end. It's just like some of those details I forgot. I also don't remember the part where they told him that if he married Cassidy, he would know nothing but sorrow.
That was actually a really great part of the show where he was getting, you know, things were moving along with Cassidy. Mm-hmm. Cassidy Yates was a member of the Maquis, or helped the Maquis in another great episode of Deep Space Nine, which is the greatest series ever for a variety of reasons. Things were going well with her. And then at one point, the wormhole aliens were like, yo, just FYI, what the fuck are you doing? Because you got... Like if you do this, like things are going to go real bad for you. And he's like, I get to make the choice. And he does stay with Cassidy, but then it means I think the suggestion is that his fate might have been different if he hadn't gone with Cassidy. But in the end, he still wins the day, but doing it his way. And I didn't mean for that to rhyme. I apologize.
So we got to do
WTHIHTB.
I feel like we need to do a quick skim of like the fucking B plot. We haven't talked about that at all.
We should talk about. How about this? Let's do where the hell have we heard that before? Then we'll do the B plot. And you know what, Dan? Jesse's not here. He's not going to scold us. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, he's not going to. Jesse's not going to be like, you guys can't do that. I've got so many rules.
He's not going to like, you know, ball his fists together and start kicking Dan under the table. Okay. So where the hell have I heard that before? Our game that's taken off across the nation. And
why is everybody so squiggly?
Around the world, everyone loves it. We play a clip from somewhere in the Star Trek franchise, an audio clip, and you, the audience at home, get to guess where that clip is from. We made him a little easier for a bit. Last week I said I wanted to get back to making them a little bit trickier. You know, just add a little challenge in there.
I should have known better. I was a fool to trust any of you.
But we did have a winner. We did have a winner last week. But let me play the sound, and then I'll ask Dan if he knows where it's from.
I'm beginning to understand you're going to make all of our interactions as uncomfortable as possible.
and we'll see who won this week. Here we go.
Eat glass, bro.
Eat glass.
Is that a phrase?
I've never heard that phrase.
Yeah, same.
Well, this is the worst insult I think you can give someone.
What you feel is irrelevant.
That's pretty fucked up to say to someone.
What you feel is irrelevant.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
It is fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard them say that.
When I took it out of context in its isolation, I was like, that's fucked up.
Even more so if you go with, again, my interpretation, these are effectively her parents, right?
Yeah.
I think we're supposed to understand these are the overbearing parents.
Yeah.
Man, that's fucked up.
It's like what you want doesn't matter.
All these people have fucked up parent situations.
Yeah, really?
All right. So that was the clip I played last week. And the winner this week is Emmanuel Croft.
All right.
Emmanuel Croft.
Go, Emmanuel Croft.
He emailed in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com to say, I believe that sound is Kirk fighting. Wait, I wanted to give Dan, do you have any guess as to what it is?
It's Kirk fighting
the.
I failed.
I don't know.
All right. I just wanted to give you the opportunity.
I appreciate it.
Okay. I believe the sound.
I respect
bet you tried.
I believe that sound is Kirk fighting the three-boobed cat lady on Nimbus 3. The cat lady is from the planet James Brownius 3.
What ridiculous people you all are.
In the Feel Good Nebula, I'll add, what he's referring to is in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in the bar.
That's where he kicks the dude's genital knees.
No, that's Star Trek VI.
Oh, yeah.
In the
yeah,
prison.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
This is on Nimbus 3 in Star Trek V, which is like the peace planet where they're all sharing the whatever and everyone's all lame and drunk and everything. And he gets attacked by a three-breasted cat woman. And it's a ridiculous scene. It's hilarious. He goes on to say, Emmanuel goes on to say, also from a few weeks ago, you ask why Klingon sometimes isn't translated by the Universal Translator. Scuttlebutt is that Klingon have multiple languages, new Klingonese, which is translated, and old Klingonese, which isn't, so that when Work says patach, he's using old Klingon for swearing. So that's a good headcanon.
What?
Although probably true for many languages, obviously an ongoing discussion among Star Trek fans is why the Universal Translator is really good at not translating languages when you want to emphasize something. But I do like that.
This is not for you to determine.
I do like that. Now, Dan, you might appreciate this. Emmanuel concludes his email by saying, additionally, in regards to Magic the Gathering and the ping versus ding debate, keep in mind that Raphael is lawful cool, but neutral rude. There you go.
That was intense.
That's a reference to like five or six different things.
But nobody gets it right. It's crude.
thank you very much, Emmanuel, for sending in that correct guess.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
You win the prize of our respect.
Forever.
All right. So I'm going to play the clip for next week. And now all the rest of you have an opportunity to write in feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with your guesses or send us something on social media @itsgotstartrek on all the major social medias. DM us and let us know your guess. Give us as much information as you can. The more information, the better, so that we know, you know, episode, movie, character, whatever, you know, that makes it fun. Okay, so I'm going to play this twice. So here's the first time. You ready, Dan?
Ready.
Okay.
Please. So lonely.
Yeah, I know what this is.
All right. One more time, folks. One more time. Because I know you're first listening, you're like, I don't know. Here's the second time.
So
that's awful.
Yeah, what an upsetting television program.
It's disgusting. Please advise.
Okay, all right. So, thank you very much. Write in your guesses. We're looking forward to hearing those. We'll reveal the winner next
week. Thanks.
And a new sound. All right.
All right. So, there was this whole, this B-plot thing.
Mm-hmm, the B-plot, which is fun ceremony.
Yeah.
Another classic trope of a goofy-ass ceremony, whether it's Captain Archer having to apologize for his dog pissing on a tree dressing up like a fool, or Picard wearing some silly thing on his head, or going naked to a Beta Zed wedding.
Betazoid.
You know what I'm saying? A Betazoid wedding.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this whole I like it because it sort of like brought Ake and Kelrek sort of more together. There was one part when he was all stressing about because he was trying to heat this. Okay, first of all,
heating a section of the ocean.
He was heating.
That's how she discovered something was up. She was like, "Why are you using all the energy?"
By
the
way,
campus?
One of my favorite lines. I don't know why is.
A small lagoon therein.
I don't know. I like the structure of that.
I'm really enjoying this character.
He goes, you heated an ocean.
A small lagoon therein.
That's his response.
This character has sort of some hints of Odo, some flavors of Odo. And other characters as well, where he's aggravating in some ways, but he's really endearing. He's got these goofy-ass habits with his tea.
Well, okay. So one part of it where she goes... She goes, you're losing it. Heating the ocean, making it so my teachers can't do their jobs. I'm medically wearing them out of sweat. And she goes, sit down. And she goes, let me make you some tea. And then he goes,
you wouldn't even know where to begin.
Now, what I thought he was saying was, you wouldn't even know where to begin with tea, because he's such an expert. How could she even understand the first thing about tea? But what he was talking about was her setting up the dinner. That's what he was talking about, but there was nothing in context to suggest that.
I think what's nice about the way that's written is it really could be both.
It could be.
It's ambiguous.
Because like,
it's kind of hilarious because you can totally interpret it as him talking about the tea.
Yeah, but after he says that, she goes, I've done hundreds of diplomatic dinners, but you're right. Like, so it suggests that it's after the fact, it suggests that it's about the dinner, but leading up to it, it suggests it's about the tea. So
the connection they've made between these two characters and the way Holly Hunter is playing it, I apologize, I forget the name of the actor at the moment who's playing what's his name?
Kelrick.
It's great. They have excellent chemistry. And I'm not saying necessarily romantically or anything like that, but just the way they play off each other.
They seem like they could be good pals.
Yeah, but it's also the kind of, again, it could be very cliched, but it's not.
Raul Baneja?
They're just doing such a nice job.
I was speaking his name.
Raul Baneja.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you bring in Tig Notaro, you bring in the doctor, they've got such great chess pieces, and that's what makes for a great Star Trek show. That's what makes TNG or Deep Space Nine or whatever, where you have all these pieces you can put around in different scenarios, and in some scenarios that piece is a badass, in some scenarios it's a goofy comedy, in some scenarios it's tragic.
And now a request from the gift pig.
And they got the spoons with holes in
the spoons,
it, which is a classic stupid alien dumb shit.
And they've got some bullhorn, little mini bullhorns that they have to use while they talk. And
the doctor's just loving it.
Yeah, the doctor's like, and the doctor's all like, you can't laugh. This is so serious. And then there's the whole... To which even the doctor laughs at that, who's like, he was like, it's a great insult. Yeah. And it's funny that it's a great insult to laugh at that scenario, because of course the scenario where you're never supposed to laugh is the scenario where something like that happens, which is probably why they made that rule, because everyone kept laughing and they were like, no, this is serious, you guys. If you laugh, it's a great insult. But like, it's a fart fish.
And we should note, we never see this dinner. Right?
Yeah, right. We never even meet the person he's meeting.
Because we don't need to. It's unimportant. Yeah. The important thing is the interactions between these characters, getting to know each other, learning more about each other, understanding each other better, and amusing us along the way.
Yeah, so it was, Kelrick was like, he was really looking really stressed the whole time, even though it was a rehearsal. So Ake was playing Chancellor Amal, the doctor was the Kamita Sage. Reno plays the part of the secrets garden and the sacred gift pig.
Yeah.
And it was just funny, the sort of like, you have like the interaction of Kelrick and Ake, you know, their thing. But then you have like the supporting characters of Reno and Doctor, who are the kind of the perfect foil for each other, you know, or she was the foil for him, actually. Yeah. She didn't give a fuck about anything.
Well, he's super enthusiastic. She doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Could be cliched, but it works.
But her perfect dry humor in that situation is amazing. And then they had what were the different things they had to do? The music playing, interpretive dance, open-hearted salute. The way he was playing that flute, I couldn't tell if Kelrick was supposed to have been practicing that weird flute thing or if this was the first time he played it. Because the way he presented it, everyone was like, oh, it sounded great. Yeah. They were complimenting it in a way where they were he wanted to sound good. But if he picked up that flute for the first time, obviously he's not going to sound good. So I'm guessing he had just picked it up for this dinner. And of course it sucked badly, but he was able to laugh at himself about it later.
Well, and that, again, that's what makes that character good, is that they don't present him as having his stick so far up his ass that he can't ultimately, he does loosen up, right? Mm-hmm. In each of these episodes, he loosens up, right? In the Vitus
Reflux?
Vitus Reflux?
Snicus.
He's a kind of an aggressive piece of shit for a lot of it, but at the end, he gives up. He's like, he gives honor to Captain Ake and says that she's the best in the game. And it's a similar thing here when he finally cracks that little giggle.
Yeah, when he's able to laugh at himself, when he laughs.
Exactly.
But it was also interesting because he was upset because he felt like Ake abandoned them. So you could tell like he did.
There was a motivation. It wasn't out of nowhere. He wasn't just a jackass asshole.
But
he had a reason
But it shows that, like, whether or not he just doesn't like the idea of people leaving Starfleet in general, I don't think it was that. I think he likes her.
Yeah.
And he was, like, upset that she, like, he felt like a friend of his or a colleague who was he thought was cool abandoned him. He felt abandoned by her. Not just that she abandoned Starfleet, that she abandoned him, because I don't think he would have been that upset with just anybody, like, leaving.
Actually, I don't take it that they had a prior...
No, I don't think they have any, like, prior... I don't think they have any...
I do think... But I like your interpretation.
I don't think they have any romantic thing
going on. No. I don't mean romantic. I'm saying I don't know that they ever knew each other before this. That wasn't the impression I got. Really? I did get the impression, going off of what you're saying, that... He didn't like it in terms of you are a great captain and you took your piece off the board when we needed you.
Yeah.
I think that was his perspective.
That might be more.
And that was why he was offended by her leaving. That's why he said you abandoned us. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't care if it was some nobody who did it, but because it was her and she had her long life. What was that? Was that a horse fart?
That was the noise Reno made after, After Kelrick says...
The city of Reno, Nevada made that noise?
No.
Oh.
He goes...
I possess a biting wit.
I didn't catch that. It's really funny. I did like that line when he said, like, I possess a biting wit, because that was
good
funny.
Good thing I'm hilarious.
There was one part where she corrected, she goes, he says some shit and she goes, double negative. I didn't know that a double negative was something to be admonished for.
Well, it depends on what you mean the meaning to be.
Well, I mean, if you mean the meaning to be, as long as it means what you're meaning to say.
But I think maybe she was implying that he wasn't meaning it and he was doing a double negative to
actually,
be an emphasizing negative as opposed to a negating negative.
Actually, it was a triple negative. He says, you not keeping your word doesn't mean I wouldn't, you not keeping your word doesn't mean I wouldn't keep mine.
Yeah.
I think
a double negative if you're only counting the last two parts.
Well, it's a single negative if you only count the last part. What's your point?
My point is because I don't have the brain power to disentangle all of this.
You not keeping your word doesn't mean I wouldn't keep. I think he said exactly what he meant to say. So I think she was correcting him on. Maybe she was just pointing out that it was a double negative, not that there was anything wrong with what he said. I don't know. It was confusing to me why she pointed out, because I think he said exactly what was intended to be said.
I'll have to go back and check it out.
Because you not keeping your word doesn't mean that means you keeping your word means I. You keeping your word means I wouldn't keep. Actually, you know what? I don't know.
Speaking of words, you're just saying a lot of words.
You not keeping your word. Mean doesn't mean weird. I wouldn't you keeping oh god
would weird
you not keeping your word means I would keep mine
here we do need I to keep our word to our audience and give them a duty or no duty because we're
not keeping
because we got to close things down but we mustn't do so before the duty or no duty.
I process data instantly.
I'm sorry, maybe next year.
It's just I have a duty to Cask. This can be my midterm project. I have a duty. I have a duty. I have a duty. I have a duty.
Unless you ask a Bajoran.
A Bajoran?
Yeah.
Bajor.
Y'all got him Bajorans right around here?
That was another thing. So the tour guide said...
Bajor.
Unless you ask a Bajoran.
By the way, like, can't they transport wherever... In Discovery, they didn't have, like... They would use transporters to change floors. Didn't they use transporters to change floors in Discovery?
In emergencies. They didn't always do it on the regular.
I thought they did that on the reg, because here, like, couldn't they just transport over to the... They had a virtual interface with the museum, which is probably good to save space. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they could just transport over there.
I mean, you also got to get your 10,000 steps.
I mean, maybe they don't... Was Discovery was post-burn, all of it?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just thought I remember Discovery, they used the transporter everywhere for every... Like, even to change floors, they used transporter, I thought. I'd have to rewatch.
That was that movie that won the Oscar a few years ago with Michelle Yeoh. Transporting everything everywhere all at once.
Oh no, that's not what it is. I'm just saying I thought they were more liberal with transporter usage in Discovery than they were here, because here they have an elevator. Mm-hmm. Here they have virtual interfaces instead of going to them. Anyway,
they even got some stairs.
I have a duty.
I vote for duty.
I think it's a definite duty.
It's a duty.
It's a max duty.
For Dan, it's a definite duty. For Patrick, it's a regular old. It's a duty.
It's a duty.
Okay.
It's a super duty.
All right.
The Cisco was created by the prophets to be their emissary to the people of Bajor.
Unless you ask a Bajoran.
Bajoran.
All right.
Anything else? Any remaining sound clips to play? Any listicles?
Any
bits or bobs?
Well, we can't. It's not a full episode of Starfleet.
Starfleet Academy
without
great jackets, guys.
Kyle.
Oh, Kyle. Yeah, Kyle's great.
They're all like, Bobby was like, fuck you. And then Zolo was like, fuck you. And he's like,
great jackets, guys.
And then the look Zolo gives him is like, what the fuck?
I mean, it was great because it wasn't just anger. It was like anger and a little bit of confusion. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, and then Darren was like, because Jaden was dancing with Kyle. Yeah. And he was, and Darren was like,
oh, at the bar. We didn't even talk about the bar fight.
Yeah. He was like, you've had too much. You're slumming it. I think Darren was a little jealous.
I think so, too.
I think that's what was going on there.
I mean, you know, I can understand.
And I thought that bartender was really tolerant of the fact that Sam was laying on the bar at one point. In any bar that I've gone to, whenever somebody starts nodding off, that's when the bouncer or bartender comes over and be like, you guys got to get moving. Yeah. You know?
I wonder if it's different for like holograms.
Holograms?
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 Photonics?
Where would I stay?
Okay.
It's just a crazy idea.
All right.
Evidence? Yeah. Okay. Let's do it.
This is irrelevant.
All right. Everyone go back and watch all of Deep Space Nine before next week, just for fun. Speaking of next week, we will be back in your ears discussing the next episode, which is called Come Fly Away.
Come Fly. All that Creole food is making me fucking hungry. Talking about tomatoes.
Quail?
Creole food.
Oh, the Creole food. Creole?
Creole?
Cajun?
Creole?
Cajun?
Cajun?
It's the kind where it's got the guy with the big pot and he's using a paddle, like a canoe paddle that's been broken in half as a stirrer.
Even when Professor Isla Dax was talking about tomatoes, it made me think of like cooked tomatoes and stew, which normally I don't really care that much about cooked tomatoes and stew, but for some reason it was making me hungry then. It was something about the whole fucking thing.
Using the oil to stir, and he's just like putting more onions.
I think what it
was. Onions!
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I think what it was is that normally Star Trek food looks like fluorescent and weird, and this looked like
cubes and shit.
And this like looked like real food and made me think of like delicious stews. Onions!
Onions! Put in more onions.
Maybe that's where Adam Sandler got like all his voices from.
All his voices. Shampoo is better. All right. Next week, we'll talk about whatever that episode is. Come Fly something.
No.
No.
We will talk to you.
Not a fatal error.
You can go to our website. It's got StarTrek.com, social media, it's got StarTrek, all that jazz, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Step away, fish stick.
He's dead.
Divine laws are simpler than human ones. Which is why it takes a lifetime to be able to understand them. Only love can understand them. Only love can interpret these words as they were meant to be interpreted.